Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Adam Ragusea, in for Meghna Chakravarti. Coming up in just a few minutes, the debate over female sexual dysfunction. A new documentary film, Orgasm Inc., makes the case that the pharmaceutical industry has invented a disease so it can sell drugs to treat it.
But first, the newly released Massachusetts census data have revealed two things about how the Commonwealth has changed over the past 10 years. One, the population has decreased significantly in the eastern and western portions of the state. And two, the state's minority population has increased dramatically.
The nation's big metro areas are more diverse than ever. But our first guest today says diversity doesn't necessarily equal integration. And the two certainly have not gone hand in hand here in Boston.
John Logan is a professor of sociology at Brown University, where he also directs the U.S. 2010 Census Project, a multi-university effort to wade through the flood of numbers coming from the Census Bureau. He spoke to Adam a short while ago from Providence, where he's examining not just how Massachusetts is transforming, but the country as a whole.
Well, the big news, I think, is the continuing increase in the Hispanic and Asian populations. And in fact, in many parts of the country, there's been absolute loss in the non-Hispanic white population, and in some places, even the black population is declining. This is particularly true if you look at the over 18 population. Both the white and black populations are aging. And most of the growth, not just from immigration, but most of the growth in terms of childbearing is showing up as a result of the Hispanic and Asian groups.
What are we seeing in America's cities, or more broadly, the metropolitan areas?
Well, the feature that I've been most keen to follow up on is the question of to what extent diversity in the country is showing up as diversity in the neighborhoods where people live. And in terms of black-white residential segregation, which has been the major concern historically in this country, what we see is a continuation of a very slow but steady continued reduction in segregation from what was a really high level in 1970 down to what is still a very high level today, but not as bad as it was.
Well, Professor, how would you define segregation in the context of the modern city?
Well, it's becoming more complicated because it's definitely no longer a black and white metropolis. It's not even the city anymore. It's the city and the suburbs. So that's why I use the term metropolis. Hispanics and Asians are new groups that are developing residential enclaves all over the metropolis in most parts of the country. And even though they're not as segregated as African Americans, they're having a very visible impact on the character of cities as the populations grow. In some places, what we find is that previously all white neighborhoods open up to Hispanic and Asians in a first step and then become more diverse as African Americans enter in a second phase. And in fact, quite a lot of Americans live in diverse neighborhoods today of just that type.
It strikes me as interesting, you know, the suburbs, I think, used to be thought of as the province of white flight. And now what we're seeing is that that narrative is breaking down.
Well, the suburbs are becoming very, very mixed, but white flight continues, and now it's particularly to the exurbs. Further out suburbs is where people who are unhappy with what they see as the urbanization and in some ways the increasing diversity of their neighborhoods in the suburbs decide that what's going to work best for them is just to move further out. So, in fact, there is a continuation of white flight from integrated neighborhoods, and that's precisely why we don't see more improvement in the overall measures of segregation.
At the same time, though, that continuous outward pressure from my own anecdotal experience in Boston seems to be folding in on itself to an extent back into the city center, isn't it?
Well, it does seem to have some natural limit beyond which if you went too far out, you couldn't even get to the job in the suburbs.
Yeah.
But, of course, a lot of employment is outside the central cities. The question of whether cities themselves are reviving is one that I think we're going to have to look at really carefully. I think that the notion of a gentrification or a revival of cities has been played up a little bit more than is the reality.
Really? But these data don't support that.
Well, we haven't had a chance yet to look very closely at the breakdown between city and suburbs, so I'm hesitant to jump in too quickly with a conclusion. But what we found in the past has been that the city is particularly attractive to young, highly educated people. Adults in their 20s with a college degree are disproportionately found in cities. But as they reach the age at which they're getting married and deciding to have children and their children start to go to school, the suburbs become much more attractive.
Or the exurbs, as you say.
Or the exurbs.
Professor Logan, you've had a chance to look at some of the Massachusetts-specific data. What jumps out at you there?
Well, I think some things are a continuation of what we've seen in the past and are similar to what we see across the country. The Northeast is not on the whole growing in to the same extent as, for example, we see Texas and Arizona have had very substantial growth. The Northeast is still growing, but the growth is pretty much limited to the extent to which we are attractive to the Hispanic and Asian populations. In the city of Boston, the white population really had no change, and there was some loss of African Americans. But in the metropolitan area, I think actually there was an overall loss of white population.
And what are the numbers for the Hispanic population and Asian?
Well, they're shooting up. Boston now has a substantial Hispanic population, and it continues to grow another maybe 30 or 40% in the last decade.
That's just such an enormous number. What does that bode for 2020?
There's no reason at the moment to think that it's going to slow down. And something I mentioned before I think is important to keep in mind. This population growth is not just about immigration. It's about large, relatively young populations who are still in a strong childbearing stage of their lives. And so they're going to continue to have babies, and their children in 20 years will grow up and they'll have babies. Whereas at the same time, as I said, there's a graying of the white and black populations. And so they're going to decline as a share of the total. And when we look at who's in the schools, for example, we'll see that at some point, even the Boston suburbs are going to be only half non-Hispanic white in the public schools. It won't be very long before we get to that point.
I was struck when the American Community Survey data came out a few months ago, and the New York Times came up with a terrific visualization of the racial data, a map that you can go and look at online. And I looked at the city of Boston, and you had the different racial concentrations highlighted in different colors. And the segregation that I know intuitively from living here, I know about it. I'm not surprised by it, but to see how stark and concentrated the divisions are, to see this big splotch of yellow representing Hispanics in East Boston, this big splotch of blue representing blacks in Roxbury, Dorchester, Mattapan, to see a big splotch of green representing whites in the wealthy western suburbs, was very, very stark experience for me. I wonder if does this different, this now more thorough data, I guess, the 2010 census data, does that bear that interpretation out? How is segregation looking in the city of Boston?
We're going to see a map that looks very much like the one from the American Community Survey data. This is an interesting point. In fact, many Americans think about the diversity of the place where they live in terms of who do they see in the shopping mall or who they see in the streets or, you know, who's around. But when you get to the point of where are people going home for dinner at night, it is much more separate. And I think that doesn't resonate with Americans' sense of what the story is. We feel like segregation is something that we dealt with 30 years ago, and it's not really an issue today. But when you look at a map that actually shows you visually, you know, here's the picture, this area is more than 70% one group, and this other area is more than 70% another group. And it's very stark, and it brings home the extent to which, in at least this area of life, we haven't made that much change in the last 30 years.
Professor Logan, thank you so much for walking us through these numbers.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
John Logan is a professor of sociology at Brown University, where he directs the U.S. 2010 Census Project. Now, while the minority population in Massachusetts is on the rise, other communities in the state are on the decline. One example is Cape Cod, where the overall population has decreased. When Massachusetts Secretary of State William Galvin broke the bad news yesterday, he put forth one possible explanation.
You have a lot of people who spend the winter months in Florida. For tax purposes, might well be residents of Florida.
Aha, so they're not gone. The snowbirds have just flown south for the winter. Business reporter Sarah Shemkus wrote about the Barnstable County numbers in this morning's Cape Cod Times. I asked her earlier today, does Galvin have that right?
We're not really sure yet. Seasonality is obviously a huge issue, and we don't really have the data to determine how much effect that has had. But we have been having some concern for a while now about younger populations leaving the Cape. It seems likely to us here that that has had a significant effect on the numbers.
So what we're seeing is a particular drop in people under 18. What's that number and what's that about?
Between 2000 and 2010, the population of people under 18 dropped by more than 18% and seems to confirm what we've been hearing for a while, is that younger professionals and younger families are either leaving the Cape or declining to come here in the first place.
Where are they all going?
Basically, they're looking for better job opportunities, more diversity of job opportunities, more opportunity for advancement. The one couple we spoke with that went to South Carolina specifically was concerned with their son's future. They didn't want him to grow up on the Cape, love the Cape, and then feel like he had to leave because there were no jobs for him down the road.
So, Sarah, I get that the fishing industry is not what it was on the Cape, but beyond that, what is it that people used to do for a living on the Cape that they're not able to do now?
That's actually kind of unclear, because if anything, we've had a bit of a diversification. We have obviously the tourist industry, but we also have some young growing tech companies. The internet's making it a lot more possible for people to run small tech-based businesses here. So it's not really clear that there's jobs leaving, but there's definitely a perception issue for young professionals down here.
Sure. So, Sarah, you might have plenty of telecommuters or internet entrepreneurs who can just be out on a house on the beach somewhere. They could be anywhere in the world. But at the same time, though, what these numbers do show you is that the towns that are maintaining their population or seeing population growth are in the Upper Cape, the ones that are closest to the Metro Boston area and are able to commute up, right?
Yes. The only three towns on the Cape that showed growth were Bourne, Sandwich, and Mashpee. And those are the three towns closest to the bridge with the easiest access up into Boston and the surrounding areas, which we have attributed to most likely that it's easier for people to commute.
So, Sarah, people on the Cape have known about this for a long time. They didn't need the federal government to tell them that the population was going down. So how are people responding to it, both in the business community and maybe in government?
Well, for the past few years, people have been very aware of this phenomenon. It's been particularly on people's minds. There have been some efforts to deal with it. There's a group, the Cape Cod Young Professionals, which is focused both on providing social support for young professionals, but also helping them get engaged in town government and helping think about what could be done on the Cape in the community with services to make it more amenable for young families to be here. Regionalization is another thing, combining town services, fire districts, school districts. Basically, it allows you to provide better services at more efficient cost and keep the cost of living down in the area. Two towns right now, Chatham and Harwich, are just on the verge of forming a new school district. I believe we're actually going to find out what the name of it is today.
Sarah, I realize that you're the reporter and not the story here, but you sound to me like you're a young professional. Why do you live on the Cape?
I came here for the job, in fact. The Cape is a beautiful place to live, but I don't think I would have come here for the Cape itself if I didn't already have a secure job offer in place before coming here.
Sarah Shemkis is the business reporter for the Cape Cod Times. Thanks so much, Sarah.
Thanks for having me.
And stay with us. Up next, a new documentary explores the pharmaceutical industry's stake in the science of female pleasure. It's called Orgasm, Inc. We'll be back after a short break. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Adam Ragusea. This is Radio Boston.